This is Colorado Edition from KUNC. On today's show, we explore the proliferation of black market marijuana even after the drug was legalized.
I think it's added a lot of work to what we do. You know, we've had instances prior to the legalization of marijuana where we would find an occasional grow like this. But ever since it became legal, we've really encountered much more.
Plus, we head to Utah to dive into the world of extreme horror.
That's coming up. It's Tuesday, October 29th. You're listening to KUNC's Colorado Edition. I'm Erin O'Toole.
And I'm Henry Zimmerman. Students are shouldering more of the cost of earning a degree from a public college or university. That's according to a new report from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. The report found state funding for public 2- and 4-year colleges has decreased by more than $6 billion over the past decade. To discuss the report and its findings, we're joined by KUNC's Stephanie Daniel.
Hi, Henry.
So this report compares costs from 2008, before the Great Recession hit, to 2018, and it looks at two factors, state funding for higher education and published tuition prices. Now, the report includes data from every state. How does Colorado compare?
First, let's go back 40 years. I spoke to Michael Mitchell, who co-authored the report, and he said in the late 80s, tuition accounted for about 25% of funding for public higher education, and states paid the rest. But today, nationally, the split in costs is almost 50-50, so students and their parents are paying more to attend college. Now, how do these two factors, state funding and tuition costs, play out here? Colorado has only seen about a 10% decline in state funding over the past decade, and that's compared to a national average of 13%. So Colorado actually has had a slightly smaller decline. But on the other hand, the cost of attendance has shot up. From 2008 to 2018, published tuition, which doesn't include other costs like food, housing, or books, increased by almost 70%. Nationally, that number is only up 37%. Here's what Mitchell had to say.
So we have seen an additional shift in Colorado, where we're expecting students and families from tuition to be footing a much greater proportion of the bill than we expect kind of from a shared investment of Coloradans.
I do want to note that while state funding does remain lower than pre-recession amounts, some states have begun to reinvest in higher education over the past couple years. Per pupil funding actually rose in 9 states, including the largest increases in Illinois, North Dakota, and Wyoming. But this list does not include Colorado.
As you mentioned, families and students now pay more to attend college, but wage growth and household earnings haven't really kept up with increasing tuition. So this means a higher percentage of household income is going to higher education costs?
Exactly. Mitchell says there are two factors at play here. One, more students of color and low-income students are attending college. And two, there are wage and earning disparities between minority and white employees. He says that means the higher cost of college disproportionately affects families of color.
We're asking households, particularly African-American, Hispanic households, Native American households as well, that either don't have access to high incomes on average, or don't have the kind of wealth that's needed to afford college to foot that larger share of the bill. So you can see across states as a share of household income, when you look at by race, that those costs that are associated with college make up a much larger share of that take-home pay.
In 2017, the average share of Coloradans' household income that went towards paying for a 4-year college degree was 24%. For Black and Hispanic families, that number was 32%. Now, the report also says that states can do more to ensure college affordability and accessibility. One recommendation is to strengthen need-based financial aid programs.
Speaking of affordability and accessibility, the report also looks at what states are doing to help immigrant and refugee residents attend college. Where does Colorado stand there?
21 states and D.C. have inclusive higher education policies for immigrants, which means they offer in-state tuition and financial aid regardless of immigration status. This group does include Colorado. Also, in 2018, the state legislature passed a law that allows refugees and special immigrants to qualify for in-state tuition. And last year, Colorado Mountain College launched a program that provides funding for undocumented students and others who are not eligible to receive federal financial aid. These policies are important because the majority of jobs in Colorado now require some type of post-secondary education.
Stephanie, thanks for breaking it down.
Thanks for having me.
let's take a look at today's headlines. And we'd be remiss if we didn't begin with the weather. A cold front has been producing lots of snow across the Front Range and in the high country. The winter storm caused hundreds of flight cancellations and delays at Denver International Airport today and this evening. Most schools held classes, but many districts in the Denver area said they would send students home early.
Meteorologist Greg Hansen is with the National Weather Service in Boulder. He says the amount of snow isn't unusual for this time of year, although it's not typical for October to see three storms in a row. What is unusual is the intense cold.
We're looking for right around record-breaking cold temperatures tonight, certainly in the single digits on the plains and even colder below zero up in the mountains and the foothills. So it's going to be a cold night tonight. Tomorrow is also continuing cold, high temperatures only in the teens, so people need to be prepared for that.
Hansen says we can expect another 2 to 5 inches along the Front Range tonight and more in the mountains.
The Colorado Attorney General's office is working to determine how many criminal sentences could be invalidated by a recent ruling from the state Supreme Court. At issue is a decision in which the court found defendants can't be sentenced to prison followed by court-supervised probation, as opposed to prison-supervised parole. A request has been made to the court for more time to explain the ruling and to determine how many defendants could be eligible for early release.
State lawmakers are considering a measure to change the state license plate back to an older design with green mountains and white letters. But it's not because they feel nostalgic. Supporters say switching the design will get more drivers to properly register their cars and trucks. They also say the current plates start losing their reflective properties after 5 years and are harder for police to read. Lawmakers who serve on a transportation committee advanced the proposal this week, but it still needs approval from the full legislature.
Ever since Colorado legalized recreational marijuana, charges for illegal manufacturing have gone up, not down. As KUNC's Esther Honig reports, efforts to stamp out the black market are straining law enforcement, especially in rural areas of the state where resources are limited.
On an early September morning, a caravan of unmarked cars and an armored vehicle tear through a quiet suburb in Pueblo County. Residents watch, frozen in their driveways.
I think any neighbors are ever just totally caught off guard by all this.
I'm riding along with Captain Leroy Mora from the Pueblo County Sheriff's Department. He and 30 officers have teamed up with firefighters and a few federal agents to execute warrants on homes they suspect are illegally growing marijuana.
The Crime Stoppers tips, you know, utility bills, modifications we can see maybe on the outside of the house. Really, truly, we don't know how many plants are in there until we get in there.
State law limits the number of plants allowed at a private residence to 12. It's an effort to crack down on the thousands of pounds of black market marijuana shipped out of state each year. It sells for 3 to 4 times Colorado prices.
Is this an issue you ever thought you would be dealing with when Colorado legalized marijuana?
I don't think we foresaw this, no.
Yeah.
Based on numbers from multiple sources, we estimate that more than 100,000 plants were seized statewide during the last fiscal year. One study suggests charges for producing marijuana have increased 42% since it was legalized.
And you have, looks like, chickens, a little playset, a lawnmower.
Correct.
Pretty unassuming.
No.
House.
They try to just, you know, intermix with the residents and try and be as normal as they can, but there's a lot of anomalies that make them stick out.
Like extra air conditioning units and blocked out windows. Mora says these operations move into a house, gut the insides, and string up hazardous wiring for grow lights and fans.
I think it's added a lot of work to what we do. I mean, you know, we've had instances, you know, prior to the legalization of marijuana where we would find an occasional grow like this. But ever since it became legal, I mean, we've really encountered much more.
This was Mora's 8th crackdown this month. The operation I'm shadowing cost the department over $2,000.
I think that it's a strain on all law enforcement.
Dan Voles is with the Colorado Bureau of Investigation. In the last year, they've created a special task force that assists law enforcement in rural areas with illegal grows.
We'll ask them basically what capacity they'd like assistance in. And some agencies just are really struggling for resources and infrastructure.
There is no data showing exactly how much black market marijuana costs Colorado, But since 2017, the state has spent $6 million annually in grant funding to help law enforcement take down these operations.
You know, these are very difficult cases for our teams to work. I mean, there's a lot of manual labor involved, quite frankly.
We'll have to go to the next one. He actually only has 12 plants right now.
Back in Pueblo, after a team of SWAT officers enter the two-story home, they find it is not an illegal grow.
How often would you say this happens?
It's the first time I've seen it.
From here, Captain Mora drives another 10 minutes to his second house, where we find officers zipping into hazmat suits because of what they found in the basement.
Pretty professional.
Correct.
Not at all like kind of the scattered sort of situation.
They're pretty proficient and organized how they do it.
So this is 11 plants?
11, correct. So they'd be legal here, but then you come over here.
In the next room are dozens of young plants, many ripped out of their pots in a last-ditch effort to conceal them. The total plant count is 37, which is later charged as a misdemeanor.
So that is the resident being let out in cuffs.
The suspect is 48 years old, from Florida, and has alleged ties to Cuba.
Looks like he was still in his pajamas.
Morris says that's a common pattern in these cases, and it might suggest a larger criminal organization.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating because when you think you're getting ahead of the game, you're really not.
It's like a game of whack-a-mole. Because as long as marijuana is legal in Colorado, but federally prohibited, many law enforcement experts agree the black market will continue to thrive. Esther Honig, KUNC, Pueblo.
You're listening to Colorado Edition from KUNC. For students with dyslexia in a conventional school setting, it can be easy to fall behind in classes. But one school in Colorado Springs is designed specifically to help students with the common learning disability. Joining us now is Ann Shimke, a senior reporter for Chalkbeat Colorado, who recently reported on that school and how dyslexia is handled around the state. Ann, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
Before we get to the school, can you tell us a bit more about dyslexia? What do we know about it today, and how common is it?
Dyslexia is a pretty common learning disability that affects students' ability to process written language and pronounce words and basically read. About 10 to 20% of the population have dyslexia, which in Colorado amounts to about 90,000 to 180,000 school children have dyslexia.
Let's turn to the Academy for Literacy, Learning, and Innovation Excellence in Colorado Springs, otherwise known as ALLIES. What can you tell us about that school?
ALLIES is in its third year, and one of the most distinctive things about ALLIES is a 50-minute therapy session that all students take. There's one therapist for four children, so extremely small, much smaller than what you'd get in a traditional setting. And the therapists work with students on a very explicit, structured process to decode the words on the page. It's very different from what you'll see in a traditional classroom. Students are circling letters, accent marks, and stress marks on every letter of every word, and it basically helps them break the code. All the teachers at the school are highly trained in serving students with dyslexia, but also serving students who have co-occurring conditions. So things like attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, dysgraphia, which is a learning disability related to writing. So they know how to accommodate for all those different conditions.
What I found interesting is that this is a public school, not a charter school. Is it rare to see a specialized school like this that's a public school?
Yes, I think it is relatively rare. This is the only public school in Colorado specifically designed for students with dyslexia. I think we're going to see more coming down the pike in the next couple of years, but it does cost more to run. It's about $10,000 per student versus other elementary schools in that district run about $6,000 to $7,000 per student.
Is this considered kind of like a trial run or an experiment of how to, you know, then take this model and develop other schools?
It is kind of seen as a learning lab, so to speak. One administrator I talked to with District 49, where the school is located, said he doesn't necessarily think all districts must have a school like this, but he thinks, especially as services for dyslexic students are kind of in their earlier stages here in Colorado, that it's a really helpful hub to have where people can visit, they can tour, they can see how it's done in a really intensive setting.
With this being a public school, what does it mean for Colorado students who maybe can't afford a private school?
When I talked to parents about this school and what it meant for them, they were often moved to tears. They described it as a lifeline, something that had even saved their children who had for years struggled and not really made much growth and had terrible self-esteem issues in traditional public schools. So in short, it was a lifesaver for them.
In researching for this school to tell this story, did you learn anything that surprised you?
Yes. So one thing that was interesting, and it was a misperception I had, is that students with dyslexia do things like switch D and B, and or see letters backwards or see letters jumbled. What I learned is that that's not always the case. They may see the letters just like we do, but the way their brain processes letters makes it harder to read.
Ann Shimke is a senior reporter with Chalkbeat Colorado. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It's that time of the year when many of us head out to corn mazes, pumpkin patches, or haunted houses. But some people want more. How about getting waterboarded, electrocuted, or even force-fed maggots? That's the world of extreme haunted houses. Nate Hedgie of the Mountain West News Bureau visited one in Tooele outside Salt Lake City and takes us inside.
I'm in Asylum 49's basement. It's actually an old hospital. Heavy metal is blasting from a loudspeaker. Everything is pitch black, except for a single flickering strobe light. High school senior Caden Myrick squirms as he's held down by a guy named Dr. Fear. Then a blood-soaked nurse zaps Myrick with a handheld shocker. It's low voltage, but listening to him scream, it's obviously not pain-free. Myrick is shivering, soaking wet. He signed a waiver and paid $100 to experience this so-called extreme haunt. And before he was shocked, Dr. Fear and a ghoulish punk named Spike poured water from a hose over his bagged head to simulate drowning. And yes, in case you're wondering, that's also known as waterboarding.
Here you go.
He's also splattered with synthetic blood and chained up to a pipe. Now, Dr. Fear is throwing him into a small, dark room for solitary confinement. The door slams. And then Dr. Fear turns and stares at me. He's a massive guy with a white cataract eye peeking out from behind a blood-stained surgical mask.
How you doing?
Good.
Are you recording still?
Yeah, always recording.
What do you think? Think we're a little crazy?
That's just a little bit crazy, yeah.
You think I enjoy this?
I think you do enjoy it.
A little bit too much?
Maybe a little too much.
He just keeps staring. I don't like it. I mean, I get scared during PG-13 horror movies. But this is a full contact, fully immersive haunted house. It's for people like Caden Myrick, who paid to be tortured.
Why do you like this?
I don't know. It just makes me feel alive, you know? It's like, it's hard for something to cause genuine fear within me, and this does. And I just enjoy that feeling. I don't know why.
Myrick isn't alone. According to an industry website, at least 15 haunted houses across the country have begun hosting extreme nights. Asylum 49 sells a limited number of 30 tickets to these special events a couple of times every year. But founder Kim Anderson says demand is increasing because for some, traditional haunted houses just aren't cutting it.
People are like, oh, that's not enough for me. And I'm like, what do you mean? What do you want? Well, we want to be tortured. And at first I just took that as a, you're crazy. But every time we sell out.
Anderson stresses that his extreme haunts are frightening but safe. They have 40 security cameras stationed in and around the building. Two police officers are outside, and if things get too intense, guests can tap out. I even watched Anderson test an electric shocker on himself before it was used on a visitor. He says fear isn't necessarily physical. It's mostly in the mind.
Your brain will see what it wants to see and believe what it wants to believe. And I hate to say this, it's probably not as bad as you imagine.
I'm not convinced of that, at least for me. Still, for the folks who love extreme haunted houses, it's a rush.
Quite simply, chasing fear is like a drug.
That's psychologist and fear researcher Anu Asnani. She says people react to horror on a spectrum. On one end, there are folks who avoid it at all costs. That would be me. But on the other end, there are folks who run towards it. And for them, the scares are a kind of high.
When you get that feeling, I like that my heart is pounding. I like that I don't know what's going to happen, right? I like that feeling because it's so different than how I feel on a daily basis. But now I need more and more and more to get me to that feeling.
And that's where extreme haunts like Asylum 49 come in.
Oh, look who's here!
People pay money to be tortured by the likes of Dr. Fear and his sidekick, Spike.
Would you torture, would you go through what he went through?
No, no, of course I wouldn't do this. I much prefer to torture them.
What about you, Dr. Fear? Would you do it?
I live it every day, boy. This is enjoyment.
And now it's time for me to get the heck out of here. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Nate Hedgie.
KUNC is a member of the Mountain West News Bureau, a regional reporting collaboration. You can find other, less spooky stories at KUNC.org.
Halloween is fast approaching, and with every new year comes a whole new set of costumes. Kevin Poley, the co-owner of the Wizard's Chest Costume Shop, which is located in Denver, joins us to give us a behind-the-scenes look at the costume industry. He began by telling us what trends are going on in kids' costumes this year.
Usually, movies are kind of the general trend. You know, recognizable characters, video games, that kind of drive, especially kids' costumes. One of the things in both kids and adults that we've been seeing in the last few years is because of the Marvel movies essentially being repeat costumes, so to speak,
right,
that kids are now starting to go back to more generic costumes because they've already done their superheroes. And so astronauts, vampires, knights, ninjas, you know, kind of the classics are starting to come back. Now, obviously, that being said, Captain America is still popular. Harry Potter as a license is still popular. Star Wars is obviously still popular, and with an additional movie coming up. So those are always strong, and just because those franchises have been around for so long, they're always going to be strong.
And so what about for adults? What trends are you seeing in costumes this year?
Very much the same thing. Is they're going away from the quote-unquote pop culture type things. A lot of them are going towards accessories and kind of building your own using pieces to basically put together their own costume. So, you know, like steampunk, kind of Victorian steampunk, gothic coats, cloaks, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so you might start with a cloak.
Right. A lot of those things are also very versatile. And so, you know, it can be pirate, it can be vampire, it can be steampunk, it can be a little fantasy. It has some reuse, which is another thing we're seeing. People kind of adding to their quote-unquote costume box that they kind of go through and pick and choose and build something the following year.
Are there any last-minute trends popping up this year, for example, political trends?
I have not seen any of those yet. Usually the political stuff really is focused on the election years. So the election years themselves is where you usually get a lot of the, especially in terms of the masks and stuff like that.
Now, one thing I have heard is that Mr. Rogers is back this year. What is that looking like?
It's interesting because it's Bob Ross and Mr. Rogers. So it's a couple of those
PBS staples.
Pop culture PBS staples that we all grew up with. And it's not just in costumes. They're also popping back up in mugs and, you know, other things like that. It's a wider trend than just costumes. So that is pretty interesting. Nobody's made a good Mr. Rogers sweater, though. So if you can find one, that would be great.
All right. Just last question. Do you yourself dress up for Halloween?
We dress up every weekend in October. Then usually that last week, we're dressing up every day. Literally earlier, I was just putting on nice black medieval, like, pirate shirt and, like, an elven cloak. I just want to make sure it all is ready to go.
Kevin Poley is the owner of the Wizard's Chest Costume Shop. Thank you so much for joining us, Kevin.
Not a problem. Thank you very much for having me.
And that's our show for today. Tomorrow, we talk with KUNC's film critic Howie Movshevitz for advice on how to get the most out of Colorado's many film festivals. I'm Henry Zimmerman.
And I'm Erin O'Toole. Our show is produced by Lily Tyson. Brian Larson is our executive producer.
Thanks for listening. This is Colorado Edition from KUNC.